and that you've chosen to worship here with us this morning at Cary. But more importantly, we want you to know, and we want you to make sure that you feel welcomed, and that you're here today as a part of our family who is here to worship God and certainly to praise Him. Several years ago, my faith and my foundation was rocked to its core. So much so that it put me on my knees, and I was very angry with God. And when your world comes crashing down like that, when everything stops, all you want to do is to be left alone. You don't want to be bothered. You want to be left to pity yourself. And you want your world to stop right where it started. In times of emergency, the caution of paranoia many times makes us second guess our decisions. And because of that, in times of crisis and when we struggle, and when we have those paranoid thoughts because we don't know what's going to happen, we don't know what the outcome of the situation might be, and it maybe perhaps rocks our faith, it makes us question God. I'll be the first to tell you, as your preacher, that's exactly what I did. Because in that moment, I didn't have the answer. I didn't know how to fix it. So I was upset. And respectfully, I questioned God and I questioned His motives as one of His children. And like anybody else who goes through a struggle or a difficult time in life, I asked the question, why? What is it that I've done, Lord, that's causing this to befall on me that I have to deal with this? What is it that I haven't done, Lord, that's causing this to fall on me, that I have to handle this burden? I didn't think I was strong enough. I didn't think I could handle it. As a matter of fact, to be honest with you, I didn't want to handle it. I didn't want to deal with it. Because I knew it was going to be difficult. And I knew in those moments, I was going to have to do some things perhaps that were going to be difficult for me to do, and questions that I had to ask that I didn't want to ask. But I knew I had to do it anyway. Because when those things bemoan us or befall us and the difficult times do arise in our life, we still have to pick ourselves up and we still have to push forward and we still have to move on. Even if you don't want to, you know that in your mind and in your body and in your soul, that's what you have to do. If you have responsibilities, your world cannot just stop and you begin to pity yourself and everybody else has to suffer because of what you're going through. That's not saying that your situation is not bad. But because we begin to question things, you see, we want to put things on pause and we want to find the cause. Maybe if you saw in your bulletin today the title of the sermon, perhaps it made you question. Okay, it's on. Charles always does a great job fixing my mistakes. So maybe you saw that title and you asked yourself, how in the world do we forgive the perfect being? You see, there's a play on that, and we'll come to that towards the end of our sermon. But as we begin, I want to ask you two very important questions. And as I ask you these questions, I want you to be brutally honest with yourself. You don't have to answer them out loud, but I want you to be brutally honest with yourself in your answer. Have you ever been disappointed with God? Has something ever happened to you or done something perhaps where you felt that God has let you down, and where you questioned Him? Has He ever said no to a selfish request? Ever made you wait for something that you asked for? Maybe He never gave you an answer at all. But have you ever been disappointed in the Lord? I was. Because again, I didn't have the answer. And I wanted so desperately to find out what that answer was. And in my moments of quiet prayer and anger and resentment and tears, I asked the question, Lord, why have you disappointed me? Why have you let me down? Why are you doing this to me? But you see, I can read through my Bible and know that I'm in good company with the same questions that have been asked by others too. You know, I think about what Job said in Job 7 and verse 11. Job was upset. He was angry. He said, I will not restrain my anguish or my mouth. He said, basically, my soul hurts because of what I'm going through. And Job said, I'm not going to restrain in the anguish of my soul and my spirit and the pain of my body of what I'm going through. I'm not going to restrain what I'm going to say to God. So have you ever been disappointed with God? I think about Job in relation to that, and he felt like he had the right to fuss. He felt like he had a right to complain to the Lord. I think about what Job says in Job 23, verses 2 through 9. Job said, even today my complaint is bitter. He said, my hand is listless because of my groaning or my complaining. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come to his seat, I would present my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. Job said, if I could find the Lord right now, I would come before him and everything I needed to say in bitterness and anguish and pain, I would say it to the Lord if I could right now. He said, I would fill my mouth with arguments. I would know the words which he would answer me and understand what he would say to me. Would he contend with me, his great power? Would the Lord say to me, this is who I am? No, but he would take note of me. There the upright could reason with him, and I would be delivered forever from my judge. Look, I go forward, but he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. And when he works on the left hand, I cannot behold him. And when he turns to the right hand, I cannot see him. O Lord, where are you when I need you? And why has all of this befallen me? Basically, Job said, why have you let me down like this, Lord? So, question number one, has the Lord ever disappointed you? Be brutally honest. Question number two, have you ever been disappointed with life? Has life perhaps maybe not gone according to your plan? The Lord said no to your request, to your job, to your career, to whatever the case is. Has your life ever not gone according to your plan? Have you ever been disappointed with your life? Sometimes I wonder if Adam felt disappointed with Eve when death entered into the world. I think about Joseph, even though years later, when his brothers, after throwing him into the pit and basically leaving him for dead, where Joseph said, though I know you meant it for evil, God meant it for good. So even in all of that, as we ask the question, has God ever disappointed you or have you ever been disappointed with life? We can find many biblical examples of those who feel like they've been let down. Case in point, go to the cross of Calvary. At his lowest moment when he felt all alone, probably more than anybody else ever had, what did Jesus say? My God, why have you forsaken me? That is, why are you leaving me all alone to do this by myself? You think about what David went through and his sin and his error and the struggles in life that he had. Four times asking God, why? Why, God? Why now? You think about the struggles that Paul went through. We cry and we want to know why. And we've all asked the same questions. Maybe perhaps just different ways. God, why did this really happen? Aren't you in control? God, do you really care about me, don't you? God, you do love me, don't you? Why did they have to die, or why did the cancer have to come now? Why, why? And those are the questions that we struggle with. Many of us have been forced into those dark places and we want answers. I did in mine. I was angry at the world. And I was angry with God. But in that, through all of that turmoil, through all of that pain, and through all of that agony, I became a gospel preacher. So I wonder in that, as I look back now, and you think about James and what he writes, knowing that the trying of your faith produces or brings about patience, that you have to let it have its perfect work, that you're perfect and entire, not needing or asking or wanting for anything. I'm not saying that direct circumstance led to me becoming a preacher. But it made me look inward at my faith and what I believed. And so when you're in those moments, and when you're struggling with that question of why, as you go through whatever's befallen you in life, as your earth has been scorched and burnt to the ground and nothing is left, maybe you've asked yourself, what's the point? What's the point? Why should I serve an all-loving God who allows me to go through all of this? I ask that question. Respectfully, I ask God that question. So think with me this morning. Speaking with respect, we want God to explain Himself, don't we? But I think there are three-letter words that we can look at this morning that will help us better understand, perhaps in those moments of anguish and despair and pain and agony, when your world has been rocked to its core and you've been knocked to your knees and in your dark corner praying, wanting to know why, perhaps if we better understand who we are as man, knowing who God is and knowing what joy can be produced from that, it will help us understand why we go through what we go through. Let's look back at the story of Job, or the account of Job. This poor individual lost everything. The only thing he had left, and sometimes I think we want to point the finger at his wife, but understand she lost everything too, but her attitude was not as good as Job's attitude was it? Just curse God and die. Why are you serving a God that's allowing you to go through these struggles and these pains and all of this? And you think about everything that Job went through. He was left with a wife that wanted him to curse God and a few friends that thought God was cursing him. So Job thought he was out of it. And even in his questioning moments, we see his faith come through and shine, even when he struggled. Job is the one that asked, "What is man that you would make so much of him, God? And that you set your heart on him, visit with him every morning and test him every moment." Paraphrase, what have I done to deserve this? What has man done to deserve this? And what is man? That's Job's question. What is it that you visit him and test him and put him through all of these things, Lord? What is man that you do these things to him? That was Job's thought. So here are four answers that can help us understand who we are and kind of help us understand why God allows us to hurt. First, we have to remember that man is fragile. We're not made of stone and steel, are we? It's amazing that we have over a billion nerve cells in our body and it only takes one to bring us in pain and make us cry. It only takes one to cause us complete anguish. And because we are made of flesh and blood, as the Bible talks about in Hebrews 2 and verse 14, because that's the way God designed us, because that's the way God made us, we have to understand that we are not steel and stone, but that we are fragile individuals and fragile beings. And because we can hurt, and because death does happen to us, and because life will stop because of our pain, that's how we've been designed. Believe it or not, brethren, pain is an important aspect in our lives as God's children. Because without that pain, we don't recognize what we're going through. And even though in those moments of fragility, we question the fact of what God's doing as we're struggling through this pain, but that's the way God designed us and that's the way God made man. But not only are we fragile, we're also volitional. That is, we have the choice to make the decisions in our life. We want the free will to choose the things that happen. And sometimes the decisions that we make aren't always the best ones, right? Shake your head like this. Sometimes we make the wrong decisions, and because of that, we suffer the consequences. Sometimes we make the right consequences, and out of that, goodness comes to us. Because we're fragile and we make wrong decisions because of the freedom to choose those things, we sometimes cause pain on ourselves, don't we? But sometimes the direct result of somebody else's sin or consequence or volition or the choice they make directly affects us, even though we didn't do anything. That was my case. I had done nothing. And yet all of this came down crashing on me. And I couldn't understand because it wasn't the choice that I made. It wasn't the decision that I came up with. So why is it, God, that I'm suffering because of their decision? That's what I asked. But because we're volitional, we're also social creatures. We are wired, and our young folks are going to like this, to network, but not in the sense that we think about today. We are social human beings. We are not just individual telephone poles out in the middle of a pasture to be left alone and rot. You see, we're like fence posts that are connected together, and when one of those fence posts fails and rots and falls down, it affects the other fence posts that are around it, right? So not only are we fragile, not only are we volitional, not only are we social, but we're also pliable. That's a key thing we need to remember. You see, because the master is the potter, and we are the clay, and God is molding us and taking that mold and molding it and making us better than we were before. Because that's what God does. And because God is the master potter, we have to put trust into what He's going to mold and bring out of that. And when you mold something, what does it have to do? You have to take that pot or that mold and you have to place it in the fire, don't you? And with that, in the kiln, it only makes that pot stronger. But you see, we want to be molded, but we don't want to be tested. We don't want to be put into the fire. Now understand this. Many times we have this concept that we say, well, the Lord's not going to put anything on you that He doesn't think you can handle. When I was going through my pain and agony, I didn't want to hear that. Because at that moment, I didn't think I could handle it. I didn't want to handle it. But we have this idea that the Lord is just picking and choosing us as individuals and saying, today is a good day for Brother Johnny to suffer just a little bit. I think I'm going to put Leslie through a little more pain today. He's got too many smiles on his face. So let's make him suffer just a little bit today. Brethren, the Lord doesn't work like that. Read the book of James. Let no man say when he is tempted that he's tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil. And we throw 1 Corinthians 1:10 completely out of whack, right? Or 1 Corinthians 1:13, where we say, well, the Lord is testing me. That's not what the Lord is doing. The Lord is providing you a way to get out of your difficulties, but He's not intentionally putting that on you to say, I want to see how strong you are. Because many times, what we go through is the result of our own decisions. So is God telling us then what to say and do? No. Because again, remember, we're volitional. We make the choice to choose what we want to do. So it's my choice. So I have to understand that also I'm pliable, that God is molding me into something better if I allow Him to be. Struggles break us down, and if used properly, those struggles will build us back up, right? So when we understand what man is and what God has designed us to be, and that we're molded into something good if we allow Him to mold us into that, we understand that we're fragile, volitional, we have the choice to make these choices, that we're pliable. And all of this, that we understand that we're social creatures. Remember what Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 12, verses 7 through 10, when he's complaining about that thorn in his flesh? Lord, please remove this from me. 3 times he told the Corinthians, I asked for this thorn to be removed. And what did the Lord say? My grace is enough. In your weakness, I'm strong. My grace is plenty for you right now. Do you think that's what Paul wanted to hear? I doubt it, because that's not what he asked for. What he asked for was his pain to be taken away. God said, you don't need that to be taken away. There's a reminder of that right there. Has a past failure, decision, extreme situation, painful hurt, whatever it was, made you look at things differently, whether it was 10, 20, 15 years, whatever the case was, has it made you look at life completely different? Have you looked back on that, knowing and saying, I never want to go through that again, to think, but I'm glad I went through that? Maybe at the moment you did. But again, be brutally honest with yourself. Has God ever let you down? So we think about man, we also have to think about God. When we understand who we are, it helps us better understand why God made us the way that He did. God is a God of love, and He wants people to serve Him, John 4, 24 through 25. He wants us to worship Him. He wants to be in a relationship with us, right? God talks about this idea of love and this concept that we have for each other, because when people see this concept of family and how you care for each other, then the world knows who God is. And when the world knows who God is, and when the world knows it's going to suffer and go through pain, and when it better understands the Creator, the Potter, it better understands why we go through these things and why God allows these things to happen. So we just looked at Job's question, what is man? Now look at Pharaoh's question that he asked Moses. When he asked him, he said, who is the Lord? What did Moses say? Called him Yahweh, right? Those four consonants where God described His relationship with the Jewish individuals to tell them that's the relationship He had. It's called the Tetragrammaton, right? Or the theonym. So you're looking at those four letters, YHWH, Yahweh, and who God was. That is to say, when Pharaoh asked him this question, God said, I am who I am, and I am who I always will be. I am God. So Lord put it out there from the beginning when the question was asked, this is who I am, and this is what I represent. And I think sometimes we struggle with this concept, but we have to understand what God is like. You see, we are volitional, we make mistakes, we're fragile, all of these things, but God is something too. He has characteristics that make up who He is. And the Bible shows us exactly who He is. But sometimes we don't read who He is. We just expect what we know He can do. Because we demand things. You see, God is exceptional. His greatness, as Psalm 145 and verse 3 says, is unsearchable. Sometimes I don't think we can even fathom who God is and how great He is for us. And not only is He exceptional, He's also eternal, He's powerful, but He's helpful to us. Think about Psalm 40 and verse 17. As for me, I am poor and needy, but the Lord takes thought of me, and You are my help and my deliverer. Do not delay, O my God. Or Psalm 63, verses 7 and 8. You have been my help in my shadow of Your wings. I will sing for joy. My soul will cling to You. So in those moments, the psalmist is declaring how great and exceptional God is, and that's who he's going to cling to in those moments. So you add these encouraging verses to what's already been learned, that God is everywhere, He sees everyone, and He sees everything. So the choice is simple. Either as we suffer, we can do as Larry did, and we can question God, His authority, who He is, and why He did those things. And we can throw the pity party of life, just as Larry did. Or we can cling to God and His help for us to help us get through it. But it's recognizing who He is helps us understand why those things happen. He may not do what we want or do what we think He should do, but He is there, brethren, with a heart that deeply cares. So when I understand who I am as a person, as a man, we understand who God is. Here's the question. And as you look at those three letters, the question that you ask is the same question that I ask. How in the world do I find joy in any of this? No pain, no gain. Yeah, right. Agony is the path to ecstasy. You really believe that? One of our drill instructors used to say, pain is the deliverance from defeat. Through pain strives discipline. I didn't believe that at the time they were making us suffer. But you hear all of these great sayings, right? No pain, no gain. And the first thing you say, whatever. Because I find no joy in this pain at all. And when I was on my knees in pain and agony as I suffered through my situation, joy was the furthest thing from my mind. And I still grieve. And I still hurt. But is there any joy in it? I have to admit, it's a hard concept for me to swallow. I can accept it. I can share it. I can preach it when somebody else hurts. But when it comes knocking or running through my door without knocking sometimes, it's hard for me to accept. It's always easier to say than do, right? That is, we have to practice, put it into practice. And that's where I struggled. You see, I just wanted to be left alone, and I wanted to feel sorry for myself because, God, you did this. At least I thought he did. But he didn't. So after I went through all of my range of emotions of everything that I struggle with, there's got to be something better that can come out of this. There's got to be some joy in this, as God says. Brethren, count it all joy, right? When you fall into diverse or difficult situations. Think about what Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 7. Paul is one of those individuals. He certainly lived everything he wrote. In 2 Corinthians chapter 7, beginning in verse 4, Paul says, "Great is my boldness of speech towards you. Great is my boasting on your behalf. I am filled with comfort. I am exceedingly joyful." And listen to this. "In all of our tribulation." Really? Verse 5, Paul says, "For indeed, when we came to Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, but we were troubled on every side. Outside were conflicts, inside were fears." Paul said we struggled on the outside, and internally we were in pain and scared to death. "Nevertheless, God who comforts the downcast comforted us by the coming of Titus." Hey, he sent somebody for me. "And not only by this coming, but also by the consolation which he was comforted in you when he told us of your earnest desire, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more." You see, what I wanted to do in my pain was shut everybody out. Leave me alone. In that, Paul said, "I found comfort in my tribulation because you sent Titus to me." Because in that, I found comfort in consolation in the friends and those that were around me that helped me get through that time. That's my joy. Like those fence posts that are interconnected, when one falls to the ground, everybody feels the pain. It better be that way in the Lord's church. Again, one of my favorite verses. "Bear ye one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ," right? So I have to find joy in knowing that my friends and my family are there, because problems remind us how blessed we are to have friends. Again, you look at Paul's terms for the pain, the turmoil, tribulation, no rest, troubled, conflicts, fears, downcast. All of those things in that he was struggling and having difficulty with, he said in that, now you read it again and notice what he says. "In all of those comforts or difficulties, I found comfort and I was comforted. I found consolation and in that I was joyful because of what God sent for me." So sometimes what do we do in those moments of pain and agony? When we want the world to leave us alone and we shut out everybody around us, those that are there crying with us, saying nothing, are the ones we need the most, brethren. the ones that are going to pick you up and let you cry and shake your fist at God and be angry at the world as you go through your grieving process of whatever you're dealing with, knowing that it eventually will pass. Have you ever heard about the three pots of boiling water? In one pot you had a carrot, in the other pot you had a hard-boiled egg, and in the third pot you had coffee grounds. You see, after a while, that carrot, after it boils, becomes soft, starting out very hard, right? And after a little while, that egg that's soft on the inside becomes hard. And after the water begins to boil in the third pot, the coffee grounds turn the water to my favorite drink, coffee. We have to make sure that we don't become like the carrot. When the water, difficulties of life begin to boil and it gets hot for us, that we don't become soft and lose our faith. Or that we're so angry at God that we allow, like the egg becomes hard on the inside, we become calloused in our faith. That we have to make sure that we're like the coffee, right? And we change our surroundings. Because you see, when your earth has been scorched, and when it's been burned to the ground and you think nothing else is going to survive or come through any of that, sometimes God brings about the most beautiful things in life. When I worked for the Forest Service and I fought forest fires, and we would go in later to rehab these areas that had been burned to the ground, there was nothing but twigs of trees left. And gradually through all of these ashes and debris, things began to come to life again. When you think nothing is ever going to grow there again, God says, oh yeah, watch this. It will. So in your trials and your struggles and your tribulation, if I'm going to build on that foundation, which is Jesus Christ, 1 Corinthians 3:11, as we spoke about a few weeks ago of what it means to forgive ourselves, but also that we need to understand God is not a God that needs to be forgiven. He's a God that needs to be given ourselves. Giving ourselves fully over to Him helps us get through those struggles and trials and tribulations in life. That's not to say you're never going to hurt again. Anytime that anniversary comes up of that day, of that time, I break down. And I think about all of that pain and all of that agony all over again. But you know what? I look and say, I got through it. But by the grace of God, I go on. Today, you can have the same thing. So with whatever you're struggling with in this life right now, and if you're asking those same questions, if you were brutally honest today with yourself, if God has ever let you down or life has not given you what you thought it should deal you, you're not alone. Some of the strongest men in the Bible asked the same questions that I asked. So I thought I was in pretty good company. They too struggled, and we're going to struggle. So if you're struggling today, your family is here. And you don't have to do it by yourself. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to tell us what it is. You can just simply put your head on my shoulder and cry your hearts out till your desire is met. That's all you need to do. But whatever it is that we can do to bind those fence posts together to stand strong in the field of life, we want to do that for you today. And if you're not a part of the Lord's family, when you think about what God does for us in trials and tribulations, why wouldn't you want to be a part of that family? When you look at all those around here that are ready to bear the burdens of each other and lift each other up through trials and difficulties of life, that's the family you want to have. So today, if you need to come forward, if you're ready to put on your Lord and Savior in baptism to have your sins washed away, ready to cast off the cares of the world and the way that you used to live and repenting of your sins, confessing that you love your Lord and that He is your Lord and Savior, and having all of those sins washed away, doesn't mean it's going to get easy. Doesn't mean your trials and tribulations are not going to come because you are a Christian now. It just means you have an advocate with the Father that will help you get through it. Let us help you as together we stand and as we sing.